Welcome to another edition of the NHL Executive Suite. I'm Deb Placey. Jim Rutherford is our guest today, the general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins. He actually played in goal for Pittsburgh at one time. Jim was the 10th overall pick, if you didn't know, in his draft year, 1969. He played 14 seasons in goal, mostly with the Red Wings. Won a cup as a general manager with Carolina, now back-to-back cups with the Pittsburgh Penguins, and the only GM to win the cup with more than one team since expansion in 1967. Does that take you back a long way?
Yeah, for sure.
After 20 years in Carolina now with Pittsburgh, do you almost feel like this is a second act for you? Or I guess you were a player, so maybe this is almost like a third act. You seem like you're really enjoying yourself.
Yeah, it's a different chapter in my life, you know. When I was in Carolina, I was part of moving the team from Hartford to Carolina, and then I oversaw the business side and the hockey side, and in Pittsburgh, I just do hockey, which makes a lot more sense. I mean, these jobs are tough enough just to do one without alone doing two. So this is a different chapter. Being in Pittsburgh, it's been a good one for me. I love it in Pittsburgh, and we've had a good run there.
What do you love about it?
It's a great sports town. I mean, people love their sports. They understand the game. And everywhere you go, you know, people talk about the Penguins. They love the Penguins. And so it's nice to be in a city. It's not a big city, but it's kind of like a major city with everything that they have to offer. And it's worked out well.
Now, you had a long career as a player. I always wonder if, I mean, almost two decades as a big-time goaltender, a long time with the Red Wings. Do you have players, have you drafted players or start to have players that don't know that you were a big player?
I don't know. I don't talk to them that much about my past. I've always been a guy that hasn't looked back. I've looked forward. And I do look forward someday that when I do retire that I can reflect on all the things. And I have an 11-year-old son that I share my history with, and that's been a lot of fun. But for the most part, the players I have, when I bring new players into one of my teams, it's all business. What are we going to do going forward, not what we did behind us?
Do you work with your goalies much? Like, did you, even like with Cam Ward back in Carolina or Matt Murray now, do you still see yourself as a goalie and talk to them a little bit more or work with them at all?
No, not at all. No, I don't want to interfere with the goalie coach. You know, we have specialized coaches now and very good goalie coaches. There might be the odd time where I'll go to the goalie coach and ask him a question about something that one of our goalies is doing. And then we'll talk through it, and then he'll communicate to the goalie. But for the most part, I let our coaches do the job.
Now, you mentioned a goalie coach. We were talking with Glenn Healy, and even then, they didn't have goalie coaches. He said he had one for about half a year, and he called him Jerry the whole time. He didn't even really know him. I mean, the coach called Glenn Jerry. Did you ever have a goalie coach, or was it you guys were on your own?
No, I did. And when goalie coaches first come in, they weren't as specialized as they are now. You know, I think they were more at the level of being supportive, dealing with the mental part of the game, not as much of the technique and the fundamentals of the position as the guys are now. And of course, back in the 70s when I play, we didn't go through the same process of how we worked off the ice and in between games and all those things. So it was quite a bit different, but I did have a goalie coach at one time.
Did he help you?
Yeah, he did. He helped a lot. I mean, there were years in Detroit where our teams weren't very good and you really needed somebody to support you. You know, you're coming off a game where you get 50 shots and getting ready to go into Philadelphia or Long Island to get another 50 shots a game, and you needed somebody to talk to, and he was really good for me.
It's hard to imagine or remember that Detroit struggled in those years. The Red Wings struggled in those years.
Yeah, well, the 70s were really tough. You know, like we were on the right track at one point when the Red Wings drafted Marcel Dion. And he had a phenomenal career. And then he left, despite the fact we had a couple of losing years with him. he left for LA as a free agent, and it was hard to recover from that. I think it probably took the Wings 10 years to recover from that.
Wow. You think about that sometimes as a general manager, when you think that a free agent or a player leaving can impact a franchise like that, I bet.
Definitely. My experience as a player, and some of them weren't very good, but I learned from them, and it's something that I always keep in the back of my mind when I'm making my decisions. And you can learn a lot from failure, probably as much or more than from success. And I took some of those things in those days. Like one year in Detroit, we had a lot of coaching changes. We had, I believe it was three, maybe four different head coaches in the same year.
One season.
Yeah. And over my career, my 13-year playing career, I counted it up, and I believe I had 14 different head coaches. So there wasn't a lot of stability through that career, and that's something that I like to have with the people that I work with, loyalty and stability.
It's a little bit like, I think of that as like being a parent. You know, you can learn a lot from your own parents and how they did things, but you probably also saw things that you didn't like and you want to do differently. Yeah. Do you feel like that as a GM or as a parent?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, I think that's a good comparison, yeah.
Couple other things about you being a goalie. We will ask you to look back. You were the first to have a decorated helmet. Is that right? A little paint on your goalie helmet?
Yeah, there's a story to that. I was playing in probably the first to have a painted mask. That started in junior, and the coach Eddie Bush at the time said that you should have a mask the same color as the crossbar and the goalpost that blends in. And I don't know exactly the reason why, but I played for the Hamilton Red Wings, so he suggested having a red mask. And so that was the start of that. And then when I turned pro and played for the Red Wings on to Pittsburgh, I had a blue mask, and I got traded from Pittsburgh to Detroit. And the first game was in Toronto, Hockey Night in Canada game. So the guy that made my mask in those days, I told him to meet me at the airport. And when you're traded, you're always set back, you're disappointed. And I said, you know, please just paint my mask white. Don't paint it red, just paint it white, okay? And
I'm not ready for red yet.
Yeah, and yeah. And so he came in for the morning skate, and he pulled it out of the box, and it was white, but he had Wings painted over the eyes. And I was really upset. We won that night. That was kind of the talk of the game, you know, the Wings over the eyes, and so it just carried on from there.
What do you think of the masks that the players have now?
Oh, they're phenomenal. Just great. I mean, a lot more protective, first of all, which is a good thing.
Right.
But the designs on them are great. And my son plays goal, and he designs his mask every year. And last year it was Fortnite design. Or I'm sorry, this year is Fortnite. Last year was Pac-Man. So it's kind of fun watching him design his own mask.
This is maybe a second act for you too. As a parent, you have a young one. How's that?
Oh, that's a lot of fun. You know, at this point in my life, you know, you're in a different place in your life, and I have an older daughter, but having a son and watching him play hockey and watching him grow up at this point is a lot of fun.
Why did he choose to be a goalie?
Well, he did that on his, I certainly didn't sit down with him because I'd prefer him not to be. It's not fun being a parent.
Oh, it's impossible, right?
At youth hockey with all the parents yelling during the game. But he made that decision on his own. I'm sure he saw, you know, videos of me and all that. He wanted to be like his dad, but it's fun to watch him make those decisions and grow.
How are you as a sports parent watching? Are you nervous? Are you more nervous for him, or would you be more nervous watching a Stanley Cup final game?
I'm probably just as nervous in both cases. I mean, I don't show it. I kind of stay off on my own in the corner. I don't say anything to the coach or anything. I encourage all the kids. It's fun watching the kids on his team improve week by week. I enjoy that, but I get nervous for him in the games. You know, I want to see him do well.
How do you feel about some of the youth parents that you've come into contact with now, this next generation? Are they different, some of these parents?
Well, I grew up in a small town, and we only had, I think it was 9 players on the team, so there was no controversy on who was getting enough ice time or anything. But the team that my son plays on, the parents are really good and the coach is really good. But I do sometimes see a coach on an opposing team in youth hockey, you know, crossing the line a bit, or how some of the parents on other teams yell at their kids. And I think it's a time where we should just let our kids have fun.
Yeah, for sure. So you're the son of a car salesman. Your dad also ended up owning his own dealership. Do you think you got some of your deal making from him?
My negotiating skills probably came from my father. Yeah, you know, it's totally different in what he was trying to negotiate and the size of deals that I negotiate. But certainly I got the basis of that from him.
Now, you've called yourself an aggressive, like you describe yourself as aggressive when it comes to dealing with your team, or maybe others describe you that way. Is that fair? Would you say you consider yourself aggressive when it comes to making deals?
Yeah, I think I haven't described myself that way, but I travel with our team. I'm with our team all the time. I have very good communication with the coach and all our hockey staff. I take all that information, and when the staff and the coaches feel that we need to make a change in an area, then I'd say it's fair to say I'm aggressive. I think about what they're talking about, evaluate it, and when it's time to push forward, then it's full steam ahead.
You have a super tight relationship with your head coach, with Mike Sullivan. How did that start?
The relationship started a long time ago, and it only happened for like 2 minutes. But when he was when the Bruins were in the process of terminating him as head coach, I saw him on a flight. I'd never met him, and I stopped and on my way by his seat, and I just said, you know, I feel for you, and I hope everything works out. And that was the first time I ever met him. When we were looking at hiring a coach in Wilkes-Barre, I told Botterill that the most important thing was to get a guy with some NHL experience so we could have a guy in place that if we needed to make a change. And so Jason Botterill put together a short list of guys. Mike Sullivan was on it. He had the best track record of them all, and I said, you know, that's really the guy that I'd like to go to. And then I really got to know him at training camp. I saw how hard he worked, how intense he was. He got off to a phenomenal start that year in Wilkes-Barre. I think, I don't know, they went 10-0 or 12-0 or something to start the season. The Penguins were stumbling a little bit, and then I decided we needed to make a change, and then we have become very, very good friends. I like the way he works. I like him and his family, and it's a unique relationship.
I remember thinking when he did get the job, it had been a long time, and maybe I'm wrong, but it seemed like a long time in between head coaching jobs for him in the NHL. That Bruins job was like a lifetime ago. Was it a long time in between, one reason or another?
It was a long time in between, and I don't say this in a negative way, but, you know, there's different guys in hockey that kind of form a partnership with someone else. And in Mike Sullivan's case, he kind of formed a partnership with Tortorella, you know, and he was his assistant coach, and he moved to different places with him. And that was a little bit of a part of his decision. And what I had talked about is sometimes you have to separate yourself from that other person if you want to move forward, if you want to move up and get a head coaching job. And that's what he did. And that's when it moved forward for him as a head coach. But he was an assistant coach in between that time for a long time.
What's it like to be around Mario all the time now?
It's terrific. That couldn't be a better situation for someone to be in an organization with a guy that has the experience that Mario has as a player and as an owner and all his lifetime experiences, and get the encouragement that we get from him. He doesn't interfere. He's there if you want to ask him about things, and he always has a good response. He has good answers, good ideas, but he doesn't push anything on us. So it couldn't be a better situation.
He's a little bit to me like the Jean Beliveau, that he's so elegant, is great of a player and as tough as he was, and having gone through cancer and everything he accomplished. Do you still see, especially young players or players who are a little bit older, maybe even Sid and that generation, who still who idolize him or think it's a big deal when he's around? Others are in awe of him. He just has a little bit of that halo around him when he walks around.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the greatest players of all time.
Still an icon.
Definitely an icon, and everybody looks up to him, you know. I mean, but he has a certain way about him that he doesn't make people feel nervous, you know. You're very comfortable when you're around him. You're comfortable that you can talk to him. You can say what you want. And his response to you is so good. So our players have a lot of respect for him.
So you get into the GM business having had a lot of experience playing. But I love this story about how when you were still playing and you go back to home outside Toronto in Ontario for a summer, kicking around looking for something to do, and you find yourself this girls' softball team, kind of like a Bad News Bears group that you managed or coached. And tell us about how that impacted you, or what that summer was.
Yeah, well, I played baseball in my hometown probably till I was about 25. Even when I was playing in the NHL, I loved to go back home and be with the people that I grew up with. But there was a young group of girls coming up. And my sister was one of them. I think that's kind of how it started. And they wanted to form a team. They didn't have anybody that would run it or anything. We didn't have very much money. And so I said, you know, everybody wear a pair of blue jeans and we'll get the same color of T-shirts. And we're going to enter this league, this ladies' league, these women had been around a long time with a lot of experience playing softball. So we put together this team. We figured it out. We had great determination, and they ended up winning the league in their first couple of years, which didn't sit too well with the teams that have been around a long time. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, and it was fun for me to be able to kind of build a team from scratch and watch how these young ladies progressed.
Now, we did this Executive Suite podcast with Lou Lamoriello and talked to him quite a bit about baseball. He played a lot. Did you know that?
I did not, no. And I know he was good friends with Yogi.
Right, yes, he was. But he actually got an offer to sign, I think, with the San Francisco Giants.
Oh, wow.
And he had to really came to a crossroads in his life and chose hockey and Providence over baseball. He was a catcher. And I asked him why he wanted to be a catcher, and he said, well, you're kind of in control of the game. And I was like, oh, Lou, no, not you. You really wanted to, what about you? What did you, were you a catcher? Were you?
No. Probably the main reason as I went along and found that I wanted to pursue a pro hockey career, it wouldn't have been a good idea. I mean, you're getting your fingers bruised up and broken and whatnot as a catcher, so. But I played as an infielder, shortstop, and second base. And it was just a time where in the wintertime it was all business and pressure being an NHL goalie and being able to go back home and just have fun doing something.
Yeah, the pressure is so intense as a goalie. And so I asked about your son. Why did you become a goalie? Do you remember all those years ago how you ended up in
the
net?
I was the smallest guy on the team, and they said that's where you should play. But my father managed the senior team in the area, and he would have the players come back to the house after games, and the goalie of that team took a liking to me. He gave me his goalie stick one time, and it kind of just went from there.
Now you have to be the biggest guy on your team to be the goalie. What do you think of the way it's changed?
Well, yeah, the position's changed dramatically. We only have two goalies in the league now that are under 6 feet. And I think most teams are looking for those guys that are 6'2", 6'3", and up. But the position's changed a lot. The big guys are more blockers than reflex guys, the way it was played in the old days. We have a lot of goalies in the NHL now that are still reflex guys. But I think a lot of them are, you know, try to take up as much as the net as they can. They're blockers, and they're good at it. They, you know, they have great equipment.
Too much equipment for your taste?
Well, I think I think as a league and as general managers, it's kind of our fault. We let it get as far as it got to. We're kind of reining it back in. We've almost got it to the point now where it makes more sense. And you can see it because goals are up and pucks are now getting through goalies where they didn't the last few years. But now you're seeing where you think the goalie's got it, but it got through his arm or through the five hole. So I think we're getting that equipment back to where it should be. I mean, the main thing, what we should always be consider is that the safety of the goalie. And as long as that equipment's safe, then we can streamline it from there.
In terms of styles and goalies who have played the position, over the last 20 years or so, who sticks out to you?
Well, my two favorite goalies of all time, and they were in different eras, but when I grew up, it was Glenn Hall. Played the majority of his time with the Blackhawks. I think he played 502 straight games, which probably...
Could you imagine?
Couldn't imagine, and without a mask. And then my favorite goalie in the modern era is Brodeur. And I love the way he played. He, you know, even when times were changing, he was still wearing the same size equipment and still playing that old style goalie. And he had a phenomenal career. I love the way he played.
Just being able to cover his team on a daily basis, such a joy to see him all the time. I mean, I had the over his right shoulder for 80 games a year for a few years. He's so chill. When you talk about the mental part of the game, I mean, he would walk around at the intermission and have a Sprite. He never is that makeup a big part of what you look for still in a goalie, or how big of a part of it is that for you?
Well, the biggest part of what I look for in a goalie is whether he can stop the puck.
Okay. That's fair.
And from there, a lot of things don't matter, but you have to stop it consistently. And then where does the makeup go from there, and how do you handle certain situations? And that's what I keep an eye on. Like we have one of the best young goalies in the league in Pittsburgh, and Matt Murray. And his career started off with two Stanley Cup wins in his first 2 years. And we wouldn't have won the cup without him. You know, like the first year he won, Fleury got hurt. I don't think Fleury won a game that whole playoff series in 16. And then Murray was hurt at the start of the playoffs in 17, and we wouldn't have got to the conference finals if it wasn't for Fleury. Fleury played great. He won those first two series. Mike Sullivan turned to Murray for the last two series, and he was a difference maker. And so now that leads up to going forward. Now we forget really how young he is and all the pressures he's under and what he deals with. And because of that, he hasn't been quite as consistent over the last 2 years. But that's something he's learning how to do. It's something he'll figure out. But when he's on his game, he's as good as any goalie in the league.
Who on your team behind the scenes that, you know, we may not see is a real leader and helps players like Matt Murray through times like that to be more consistent, maybe a little more vocal that we wouldn't necessarily know?
Well, we don't have the Penguins don't have as many of those guys. That's an area where the cap system catches up with the team. And after that cup win in 17, we lost some key glue guys, you know, Kunitz and Trevor Daly and Bonino and Cullen for a year. There were some real leaders that, you know, could pull a guy aside. And we don't have as many of those guys. Crosby's one of the best leaders in the game, on and off the ice. But we can't turn to the top player in the league and expect him to do the day-to-day stuff and worry about whether a player's going through a tough time or whatnot. And so we're kind of in that transition period. We brought Matt Cullen back. He's helped. We have a few guys on our team that are okay at that, but our younger guys, that group of younger guys, have not transitioned into that quite yet. They're still dealing with building their own careers, and that's understandable. So that's a little bit of something that's been missing with the Penguins over the last couple of years.
It's interesting talking about this, because sometimes as fans, you know, you watch on trading deadline day, and you know a player may move to a team that has a chance, you know, to make a run and think he's a good locker room guy. That's a real thing for you, that they obviously have to be able to play, but it does matter to you to have some glue guys and to have a cup run or to be successful during the course of a season to have some guys like that.
You need them. I mean, you'd like to have them all year. When you make those trades on trade deadline day, there's a little bit of a transition period for guys to get comfortable. And sometimes a player doesn't get comfortable and you're out, you know, you're out of the playoffs. So you like to have those guys as early as you can. We made a trade on deadline day for Gerbrandsen, and we've known about him for a long time. We know what a good team guy is, and we know he's a guy that can push back to the other team, you know, when things get physical. So that was an important move for us. He hadn't played as well in Vancouver this year as he's capable of, but we felt with a change of scenery and putting him in a little different position, maybe not playing quite as many minutes, that he would help us.
One guy who seems to be like that, and he was like that as a player, and now maybe he's something like that for your front office, is Bill Guerin, who is so funny. He just kills me.
Yeah.
But what does he add to the mix in Pittsburgh?
Yeah. Well, you know, Billy was one of those guys that did come into Pittsburgh and made a difference. When that trade was made, he came in 2009 and helped the Penguins win the Stanley Cup. And you don't always get that, but that was a case where he did. He moved around a little bit after that in his playing career, but ended up coming back to Pittsburgh. And he's a good guy for me to work with. There will be the odd time where we may have a situation where we'll say, we want you to go and talk to that player. He's a big part of developing players in our organization, and he runs Wilkes-Barre, and I kind of let him go on his own there. You know, he makes the trades there and things like that. You know, with his character and his background, it's important to us.
Yeah, I mean, he has the sharp wit. He is so funny.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you know, same as he was when he was a player, he brought that to the locker room, but you still have to be able to play. He has to be able to make good decisions for you in terms of player development in Wilkes-Barre.
And he does. Like, we're a team that over these past few years is win now. And so we end up trading lots of draft picks, and we're not looking at the future. It, you know, try to win as many cups as we can when we have that window. And because of that, we have to try to pick some college free agents, bring them in. You know, you got 10, 15 teams trying to get the same guy all the time. He's part of that recruiting process, and he's part of the development process. And, you know, one of the players comes to mind that he did a terrific job with was Aston Reese. You know, other teams were after him. We brought him in, developed him, went through the development stage, and now he plays on our second line with Malkin and Kessel.
Sidney Crosby, we've been talked about a little bit. I know your coach feels this way as a Selke candidate this year. You see a difference in his defensive game, or we just haven't been paying enough attention to him the last couple of years?
People haven't paid enough attention. I think he could have been a consideration over the last couple of years. When we won the Cups, when we started winning in 16, Sid adjusted his game to a 200-foot game. And, you know, it wasn't about winning scoring races or getting a lot of points. He's still going to get his points, obviously, but it was about playing an all-round game. And he was coming back deep in his zone, starting the transition game from the top of the circles and going. And he's continued to do that right through to now. But people have paid a little more attention this year. He's a very good two-way player and really should be in the conversation as the MVP because he drives our team and he's had a really good year.
I always looked at him as a player that every summer he would go home and work on one thing and come back even better, as well-rounded of a player as he was. Like one summer he just worked on face-offs and he came back and he wins as many face-offs as he does. He wanted to improve his backhand and he has the best backhand in the league. It seems like He still is working on something every year to get better and to become a more complete player.
Always. And always the hardest working guy. First guy on the ice all the time, gets out there, works on different things, and then off the ice. You know, he's in the weight room, he's working, he's in such great shape. You know, he'll be one of those guys that, gets in his 30s and will be able to play at a high level for a long time. You see a lot of guys get into their 30s, their game starts to drop a little bit. But I don't see that with Sid. He's going to be a top player for a long time.
Thank you so much for this. So interesting.
Okay, thanks. I enjoyed it.
Jim Rutherford, we hope he stays in the game in one way or another for a long time. Don't forget, you can always download the NHL Executive Suite on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. And feel free to drop us a review. We love hearing from you. Until next time, I'm Deb Placey in the NHL Executive Suite.